Good afternoon, you are tuned to A Juno Afternoon here on Tuesday, the 1st of December, the year 2015. Jeff Brown with you here today. We'll get an update on library activities with Andy Hirsch and Beth Weigel. We'll learn about the Juno Nordic Ski Club. We'll highlight upcoming runs for AWARE. We'll get the details about the Juno Community Charter School's homemade soap. And we'll get a preview of the gallery walk in the Juno Artist Gallery. At Writer's Almanac, Bernard Music and more today on A Juno Afternoon. Well, the forecast for tonight, numerous rain showers with patchy fog later on, low temperatures around 37 degrees. Forecast for tomorrow, mostly cloudy skies with patchy fog in the morning and scattered rain showers. Thursday, mostly cloudy skies with a slight chance of rain, high temperatures around 40 degrees.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Indigenous people are among those attending the United Nations World Climate Gathering in Paris. Native communities in the U.S. and Canada are seeing the impact of climate change firsthand. A delegation of indigenous people from North America is sharing perspectives and knowledge at the climate summit. Those with the U.S.-based Indigenous Environmental Network don't have faith in the new international climate change agreement being worked on by world leaders this week. They say it will harm indigenous people's rights, lands, and environment. Dallas Goldtooth is part of the delegation in Paris. He says their message includes keeping fossil fuels in the ground because plans by world nations will not sufficiently reduce global temperatures.
As indigenous peoples, it's absolutely necessary for us to step forward and to not only talk about what we're fighting against, but then also talk about what we're fighting for, which is community-based solutions for locally distributed energy production. We're looking for local food production. All these things are all wrapped in together because we're not just talking about an ecological crisis here. We're talking about the very future of our culture as indigenous peoples. And we're talking about, you know, maintaining the sacred integrity of Mother Earth herself.
Goldtooth says the delegation, which includes Native people from Alaska, the Southwest, Minnesota, and North Dakota, is using the international platform to make Indigenous voices heard. On Sunday, Native people will travel down the canals of Paris with their message. The event will include a group of Native youth from the Lummi Nation. The Billy Frank Jr. Tell Your Story Act passed the U.S. House of Representatives Monday. The legislation, sponsored by Congressman Denny Heck, adds Billy Frank's name to the Nisqually National Wildlife Refuge in Washington State. The refuge was established in the 1970s to protect the Nisqually River Delta. The late Native advocate was a champion for treaty rights, tribal sovereignty, and environmental protection. Heck shared some words about Frank on the House floor Monday.
Throughout his storied career, people often ask, Billy, how is it that you do this? Get up every day and so effectively advocate on behalf of clean water, good fish runs, decade after decade. And he would always tell them the same thing, tell your story. So when people go to the Billy Frank Jr. Nisqually National Wildlife Refuge, they'll be able to see why he held fish ins. They'll see why he risked arrest. They'll see why he ultimately worked with others to help protect his home.
The legislation was unanimously approved and now goes to the Senate for consideration. A student in Canada has become the first First Nations person in the country to be awarded a Rhodes Scholarship. And as Dan Karpinchuk reports, he's hoping to serve as an inspiration to other Indigenous people.
Billy Ray Belcourt also says he wants to change the way that First Nations people are so often portrayed. Belcourt is a member of the Driftpile Cree Nation in Alberta. He says he was overcome with emotion when he had learned he had been chosen for the prestigious scholarship. Rhodes Scholarships are awarded to 89 students every year, including 11 Canadians. It allows them to complete postgraduate work at Oxford University in England. Belcourt says he wants to be a role model and help change perceptions about First Nations people and continue his activism.
I'm particularly interested right now in the present of sort of combating the ways in which sort of mainstream media constructs stories of Indigenous peoples, specifically when we succeed. And I want there to be a fundamental shift in how journalists relate to and interact with Indigenous peoples.
Belcourt has been studying comparative literature at the University of Alberta. He's now planning to pursue his master's degree in women's studies and medical anthropology, focusing on the health issues facing Indigenous people in Canada. Belcourt is the president of the Aboriginal Student Council at the university and sits on various committees. He is also a poet and a published author and has managed to maintain a perfect academic average. I'm Dan Karpinchuk.
And I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kawanic Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation.
Support by Indigenous governance programs at the University of Arizona, educating practitioners and policymakers to implement nation building at home and create stronger Native nations. Course offerings at igp.arizona.edu. Support by the Blackfeet Nation, who thank the U.S. government for joining them to seek permanent protection of Montana's Badger 2 Medicine Area. Information about the work to protect their sacred lands from oil and gas development at badger-2medicine.org.
Native Voice 1, the Native American Radio Service.
It's about 6 minutes past the hour, and you're tuned to listener-supported radio from Alaska's capital city. First guests are Andy Hirsch and Beth Weigel here to talk about library activities. Thank you for coming down to the show today.
Thanks, Jeff.
Thank you.
We're excited to be here today, particularly because tonight we are kicking off a new project at the library, a program we've gotten a grant for called Science on Screen. And basically it pairs great classic films with speakers who can speak to a little bit of the science that might be portrayed in the film. And so tonight we're kicking off with the movie Die Hard. It's a classic holiday film that will have a panel of experts talking about how they use explosives in their work in our community here to control avalanche danger up at Eagle Crest, put on the fireworks display. So Brian Davies from Eagle Crest will be there, Sigrid Dahlberg and Gary Stahl. We'll be there. Stamball, that's it. We'll be there to talk about the 4th of July fireworks that they put on and what goes into that. So we're super excited about the kickoff of that. We'll also be reshowing the film at the Goldtown Nickelodeon for free on Sunday as well, the 6th of December. But tonight we're going to kick off the talk at 7:30, and then the film will start at 8 because it is rated R. So we're doing it after hours at the Valley Library. So it's a great opportunity to come out and check out our new library with all the great new technology and the big screen and see a fun film and learn a little bit about some of the things that people are doing in our community to make our slopes a little safer and put on 4th of July fireworks. I know also on Sunday, we'll have a couple different people. Mark Ridgway will talk a little bit about demolition, and Greg Parker, also someone who's worked at Eagle Crest in the past, but was a military bomb disposal expert. So some really interesting people to introduce the film and talk a little bit about that. And then it's an ongoing series, so we'll be doing some other films later on in the year. We're going to do in February Elephant Man, Robin Walls from the University of Alaska Southeast History Professor. He'll be talking about that film. There's a birding film we're going to show in March and have Hank Lenfer come over from Gustavus and talk about the science of recording the sounds of nature. And then I think we're going to do Some Like It Hot, later in the spring or early summer and, talk a little bit about transgender and gender issues.
But this week it's bang up.
This week it's a bang up, and we're starting tonight at the Valley Library, 7:30, with Die Hard. So get into the holiday spirit with that.
How many people will the hall hold?
We can have up to 70 people come at the Valley and watch the film. We'll open up the doors if we need to, so we have extra room for seating, and we'll have some free snacks, and it'll be a great opportunity to come and check out the new facility if you haven't already, or just have fun watching a free film.
Do you still have the tour online for the library?
It is still on KTOO's website, actually.
So. Yeah, so that we can always post another link to that. And Matt came out, and we'd had a great time doing that tour. So we also have a blog site that kind of talks about some of the different steps that we went through when we were working on the library to get it open and some of the features of the library.
And Annie, what are you working on?
Well, I am working on a project for next week. So next week is National Computer Science Education Week, and so we are putting on 2 Hour of Code events. An Hour of Code is this national project to get people interested in coding, to figure out what it is and how they might want to get started.
You got me. What is it?
Okay, so coding is, of course, when you tell your computer that you want it to do something. Most people use coding languages like JavaScript or HTML to build websites or apps. And so what we're doing for Hour of Code is we're not doing anything that complex. We are doing a puzzle-solving Minecraft adventure on Monday, December 7th at 4 o'clock. And kids and adults can come in and learn how coding works. Like, I have a, and it's all solving puzzles. So you have a character, and you want the character to do a task. So you have to figure out how to make the character do that. Do they need to walk forward? Do they need to pick something up? Do they need to put something down? And it's a game system that gets harder as you go on. So it's the first task, you only have to tell it to do one thing. And then after you tell it to do that thing, it's like, oh, you know how to code. Great. So now that you know how to do that one thing, maybe we can learn to do something else. So it's really neat. So we have that program, and that's for all ages.
Is it for beginning coders? Or?
It is. You aren't going to learn JavaScript. What you are going to learn is the ideas behind coding, which is, I need the system to do this task. So I tell it to move forward, I tell it to turn left, I tell it to go up, and I run the program. And what happens is the result. And so if you didn't tell it to do what you thought it'll do, your character won't go where you want it to go, and you have to figure out how to solve that and figure out the ideas of, if I need to move forward seven times, do I write move forward seven times, or maybe is there another way that I can tell the program to repeat a step a lot of times?
My character would go over there, Claire.
Yes, it might, which is super fun and totally awesome.
Yeah, when she was telling me about this all earlier today, I was like, you know, when I was a kid, we used to get this magazine of our Commodore 64, and it was all about basic language, the language, you know, putting on the zeros and ones, and I'd sit there and I'd put all the code in, and then I'd run the program, and the little thing that you created, the picture, would, like, move its arm or something, and or you'd get an error, and you'd have to go back and fix it. So I think it's a lot, you know, for people who are older like me, that they can relate to that, and maybe know now that, you know, their kids can learn something that's way more advanced, and is pretty cool to see how all these little graphics and games and things like that get created.
Now, Beth, I didn't know you were a geek.
Well, I was when I was a kid.
It's a different world now.
It's a different world now. I couldn't keep up or something, maybe.
So when is your coding workshop next week?
We have two. There's going to be one, the Minecraft-based one, is Monday, December 7th at 4 o'clock, and that's an all-ages event, kids, adults, teens, whatever. And then we're also doing another one on Friday, December 11th at 4 o'clock, and that's aimed specifically at teenagers. And it is going to be an introduction to Scratch, which is just a computer program that you can use to code things. I played with it yesterday, and I made a tornado chase a dragon. So it was really fun. And so kids will be able to do animation or make stories or games, and then we should be able to share them all with each other. So everybody should be able to watch other people's animations that they can make in an hour.
Right. And those are both out at the Valley Library as well. And the second one, the teen one, will be in the teen room.
Mm-hmm.
Movies, coding. What else is going on at the library? Could there be anything?
There are other things going on at the library. Actually, we're really lucky that Joe Ordonez from Haines, he's a guide and naturalist and coming down from Haines on Saturday. He'll be here, I think, for First Friday Things because he has a new book out. And he's also going to do a slideshow for us at the Valley Library on Saturday. And it's called Where Eagles Gather. So it's all about the history of the Bald Eagle Preserve up there and a lot of the photographs that he's been taking over the years of, you know, taking people on tours and viewing eagles. So it's going to be some amazing photography from Joe and a lot of interesting history about how that preserve came together. So that'll be Saturday at the Valley Library at 5 p.m. And then we also, of course, have our ongoing programs. Our family downtown family night will be this week on Thursday evening. Kristen Romanoff from Alaska Department of Fish and Game is going to come over and talk about animals in winter, and we'll do some tracking or some fun event activities like that. And then we also have our family night that happens later in the month on the third Thursday with AEYC. And we'll be having Measures and Treasures with Cal Reichert he's a forester. So we'll explore the development of thinking abilities through general knowledge and engage with some real measurements. We'll measure, Cal measures trees, so I'm sure we'll think about how to measure trees and do some things like that. So as usual with those programs, we have a little light supper. They start at 5:30, and it's always a fun time, do a craft. So we invite lots of families out to come and participate in those. We have our Tlingit Language Learners Group, of course, on Monday nights that meet downtown. We've got our story times, and we'll be still doing story time this week and next week, and then we'll take a little break, as well as we'll be closed over some of the different holiday times. So on the 24th, Christmas Eve, we'll close at 5 p.m. at all our locations, be closed on Christmas Day. And then Thursday, December 31st, again, close at 5 p.m. and be closed on New Year's Day. So lots of great things happening at the library as usual, and we're excited for the holidays and for all the great things. We're very thankful for everybody that comes in and been coming in to check out the New Valley Library. So,
or using our other branches.
Or using our other branches, of course, yes.
Amy Hirsch and Beth Weigel, thank you for coming in the station today. Is there anything you'd like to add I might have forgotten to ask?
You can always find out more information about our activities on our website at juno.org/library or our Facebook page.
All right, thanks for coming by.
Thank you.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Tuesday, the 1st of December, 2015. It was on this day, 1589, that Edmund Spenser delivered the first part of his epic poem, The Faery Queen, for publication in London. He had written most of the poem in Ireland. His last work was a book of pastoral poems called The Shepherd's Calendar. It came out in 1579. It had been a great success, and Spenser, at the age of 28, found himself admired by the rich and the famous, and Lord Grey offered to be his patron. Spenser himself had no money. So at the age of 28, Edmund Spenser set out for Ireland, where Lord Grey was the new deputy to Ireland, and where he had crushed an Irish rebellion, and the English had seized land from the Irish. So Edmund Spenser was given a piece of land to live on, an estate of about 3,000 acres with a castle on it, and he spent the next 10 years working for Lord Grey and writing the first part of The Faery Queen. He met Sir Walter Raleigh, the poet, who had another estate there in Ireland, and they traveled to England in the fall, and on this day, 1589, Spenser registered The Faery Queen for publication. It was dedicated to Queen Elizabeth I, and he went to see her and to read his poem aloud to her. She said she loved the poem, and so Spenser hoped that he would get some sort of a government job or a pension or something so that he could stay in England. But her chief advisor, Lord Burghley, didn't think much of Spenser, so he didn't get the pension or the job. He only got £100. And it was on this day in 1860, the first two chapters of Dickens's novel Great Expectations were published in his weekly magazine All the Year Round. All the Year Round, the magazine in which Dickens had published A Tale of Two Cities, which was a big success. But that fall, the magazine was publishing in serial form a novel by Wilkie Collins, which was not popular, and readership of the magazine was dropping week after week after week. Dickens was on the verge of bankruptcy, decided that he needed to run a new novel of his own, and he set out to write Great Expectations, and it was a success. By the middle of the novel, the magazine was selling 100,000 copies each week. Great Expectations, which begins, "My father's family name being Pirrip, and my Christian name Philip, my infant tongue could make of both names nothing longer or more explicit than Pip. So I called myself Pip and came to be called Pip." as I never saw my father or my mother, and never saw any likeness of either of them, for their days were long before the days of photographs, my first fancies regarding what they were like were unreasonably derived from their tombstones. Here's a poem for today by James Laughlin, the philosopher. Well, here's a salute to that clean old man who's out every day fishing up coins with a string and a bit of gum through the subway gratings on Broadway. He says that he averages $5 a week, and he says that's enough for a man who don't drink. The Philosopher by James Laughlin, from the collected poems of James Laughlin, 1935 to 1997, published by New Directions and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by Lumosity.com, personalized brain training developed by neuroscientists to challenge memory and problem solving through online games, Lumosity.com. Produced by Joy Biles, assisted by Teresa Burgess. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
It's 21 minutes past the hour. You are tuned to listener-supported radio, KTO KRNN, here on Tuesday, the 1st of December, on a June afternoon. Our next guests are Frankie and Odin Brudy. Frankie Pilifon and Odin Brudy, here to talk about the Juneau Nordic Ski Club. Thank you for coming down to the station today.
Hi, Jeff.
Yeah, hi, Jeff. Thanks, K2. Thanks, Jeff. We have the Juneau Nordic Ski Club has an event this week, day after tomorrow, on Thursday the 3rd at 6 p.m. at Santa Kahini. It's the Juneau Nordic Ski Club annual meeting and potluck. It's a green event, so bring a dish and bring some silverware and a plate and come. On Thursday, we have a ski swap. There'll be some of the local vendors there, Foggy Mountain.
Nugget Alaskan will be there. It's a good chance to renew your membership or join if you've been so inspired already this year by the snow we have had and the skiing we have had.
Define Nordic skiing for the listeners who may be new to this world of winter wonderland.
Well, Nordic skiing is, a lot of people just think of it as skiing on level ground or flat ground, but it's skiing up, skiing down, skiing on the flat, skiing cross country, sort of under your own motor. So it's great exercise. It's right up there with exercise, but it's also a lot of fun, especially when you get in a little bit of shape. But it's good activity, and we have the Juneau Nordic Ski Club grooms trails in Juneau. You've seen the trail and the tracks around the campground at Mendenhall Lake, sometimes around the lake itself when it's frozen enough and there's snow. And we also set cross-country ski tracks at Montana Creek, which has been a good place to ski for the last few years with the limited snow we have. It seems to hold snow better.
Tell me a little bit about the Nordic Ski Club. How many people are in it?
I just updated the email list for notification for this annual membership meeting we're having on Thursday at Santa Kahini, and I came up with about 455 email names, distinct. Probably not as many people as that have actually gotten a membership. But we're hoping to up the number this year. I'd say currently there's a couple hundred people that actually hold membership.
What's their age range?
It's families. So obviously with that, you're going to hit really young ages. And I would say that we're probably have one or two that are hitting 80 as members, as the age group.
That's quite a remarkable feat.
It is. I wouldn't know they were 80, but I heard they were 80.
So a lot of adults, but also Frankie mentioned the partnership we have with 4-H, and we coordinate and run a youth program that starts after Christmas break, where we ski 10 Sundays afternoons for kids grades K through 12 and families and parents. And registration for the 4-H Sunday group is coming up a week from Sunday on December 13th at the 4-H Cooperative Extension offices on Whittier Street at 1:30 on Sunday the 13th. Sign up for the Kids 4-H, sort of a learn-to-ski program or ski as a group program, because we have gear to rent for that group.
Yeah, that's a family-oriented skiing program typically, and actually it's grades 1 through 12. And typically it's been a really nice group of members. We've capped it at about 60. So with parents and kids, we can top out at 90 on a trail, but typically not everybody comes every Sunday. And we typically have guest coaches, we call them, but they're people who are decent and good skiers here in Juneau and like to come out and play with the kids for an hour and a half, teaching technique abilities. And typically a lot of parents pick up some tips that way as well. So everybody gets to improve by the end of the 10-week sessions.
How has cross-country gear changed over the past few years?
Well, it's over the past few years, not as much as in the past 10 years, actually, and maybe even the past 20 years. There are two distinct styles now that are recognized in cross-country or Nordic skiing, and that would be the classic striding, straightforward skiing, which most people start at anyway. And then there's the skate skiing technique, which requires a little bit different boot. And ski, actually, and poles. So longer poles, shorter skis, and stiffer, more supportive boots for the skate style. Juneau likes skate skiing a lot, and big part of that is because we have so much weather that's on the freeze-thaw temperature grade, and so the traditional style of cross-country skiing of picking the wax to give you some push on uphills is more demanding and trickier in Juneau, whereas with skate skiing, like alpine skiing, you wax the full length of the ski to get the full glide out of the ski, and you have a little bit of different technique to get up the hills.
My first pair of cross-country skis were ones you had to wax, and I think, I'll learn that easy enough.
Oh, yeah. With Juneau's wet conditions, it's difficult to put kick wax on, so there's also improved not only skate skis, but gear in general has just gotten better and better. The boots, the bindings, now it used to be heavy fish scale skis were the only kind of no-wax skis where you don't have to apply goopy wax. Well, now there's zero skis, there's hairy skis, there's fish scale skis. There are a lot better quality of no-wax skis out there, too. So both between that and skating has really helped the cross-country skiing catch on here in Juneau. And the Nordic Ski Club, which is us, we groom trails for both classic, which is with the classic tracks, or for skating, which is a wider trail packed out for skating. And Eagle Crest Ski Area also grooms at least 5 kilometers of trail for both skate and classic styles.
What would you recommend for beginners?
We start the kids generally with no wax skis because it's kind of like walking, so it's a little easier.
Well, it develops confidence also if you're not used to that feeling of gliding at all.
Yeah, yeah. And some people are natural skate skiers. Like I'd say if people have ice skated before, it's the skis are short and stiff and a nice packed trail, you kind of have a sense of ice skating a little bit. So for some, that's how they get introduced to skiing. But I think generally a pair of no-wax skis is a good place to start.
Now, you rent out gear for your 4-H expeditions. Do the local businesses rent out skis as well?
Yes,
Foggy Mountain rents out gear, and actually Eagle Crest has gear as well for cross-country skiing rentals.
So you don't have to buy a new set of skis.
That's right, and that's a really good point to bring up, because if you are new to it and you're not sure which style or any style of cross-country skiing that you want to do, renting is a really good option.
And our rental gear, of course, is for the kids that sign up for the program and come out for the ski program. They're able to rent ski gear and keep it for the whole season.
That's good.
Yeah, and that's a good point to make also is the under the 4-H umbrella, which is the Cooperative Extension Service through the University of Alaska, the 4-H program is under that. And there's two programs that run. Odin's mentioned the 4-H Sunday program. And briefly, just the Juneau Nordic Ski Team, which is also under the 4-H umbrella right now. I think they aspire to become the high school as a high school team, sanctioned team. But for now, they're able to use the same program of renting gear for the season. And then they've stepped it up, of course, with the amount of times they meet during the week. And also they're sponsoring the race series last year and this year. Last year there weren't any races because of the lack of snow, but this year we're very hopeful we'll have a fun race series. And there are citizen races, just to drop that off, as well as just people who are spending a bit more or a lot more time on their skis.
And those, the Juneau Nordic Ski Team is about 30 kids, middle school and high school, and they ski 4 times a week, I believe. And so they're going to go up to a Besh Cup race in Anchorage, and then some of them ski the Tour of Anchorage. So they get out, and this year they're hoping to participate in a Whitehorse high school ski race.
Yeah, information about all these on the website.
Yes, and that's jnski.org, jnski.org. Information about the race series that Frankie mentioned, and that schedule will start December 19th, which is a Saturday, and every other Saturday there will be a town race that's open to the community. The last year we did a Wednesday night headlamp race on Mendenhall Lake, and that was a lot of fun, and we're looking to do that again on February 13th.
All right. Anything you'd like to add? I might have forgotten to ask.
Nope. Just, again, the annual membership meeting is this Thursday at Zantakahini at 6 p.m. If you're not a member, want to become a member, or think about becoming a member or learning to ski, come on out. There'll be information on all of that, and thanks, Jeff, for having us.
Thank you, Philip. Yeah. Owen Broody, thanks for coming by.
Thank you.
This is Bird Note. Take 3 raptors, the barn owl, the peregrine falcon, and the osprey. 3 birds of prey, each with a specialized hunting prowess utterly distinct from the other, and never competitors. The barn owl hunts mostly small mammals, particularly rodents. The medium-sized peregrine preys mostly on small birds in high-speed attacks, while the osprey survives almost exclusively on fish it plucks from near the surface of the water, breeding and hunting along the shorelines it shares with many peregrines. Each one of these 3 raptors is incredibly successful. They're on every continent except Antarctica. They can fly great distances, including across large bodies of water, meaning almost no island is too remote for them to reach. And like many birds of prey, they all 3 mate for life. Although it's not visible very often, the barn owl has long been thought of as perhaps the single most widespread land bird in the world. But ospreys and peregrines have proven themselves equally adaptable. 3 raptors that must rank among nature's most successful bird species. For Bird Note, I'm Mary McCann.
It's 34 minutes past the hour, and you are to the June afternoon. Our next guests are Rachel Winch and Cecilia Westman, here to talk about the upcoming runs for AWARE. Thank you for coming by the station.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah. First of all, for people who don't know what AWARE is, can you describe the organization quickly, please?
Sure. Yeah, AWARE is a shelter and a safe space for women and children. We provide services for women who might be experiencing domestic violence and sexual assault.
And you have these running events that you've been putting together for a number of years.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so we have a prevention program, and through that we have a couple of running programs. One is Girls on the Run, which Rachel is the coordinator for, and then there's Boys Run, E2Woo, Klatsine, which is the program that I coordinate.
And what does that mean?
E2Woo, Klatsine means strengthen your spirit. It's a Tlingit word or sentence that means strengthen your spirit.
Rachel, do you want to talk about the Girls on the Run program?
Definitely. So Girls on the Run is an empowerment program for girls in the 3rd through 8th grade. And basically we meet twice a week after school, and they learn life lessons through running games. So they learn things about body image and the media, about resisting peer pressure, about contributing to the community. And throughout this 12-week program, meeting twice a week, they are training for a 5K. And so this Saturday is the big event. And we like to make it really nice and fun and just to celebrate the hard work that the girls have put in over this 12-week program. So this Saturday, we're having the 5K at the Diamond Park Fieldhouse. And for Girls on the Run, we have a fun, funky theme. It's called Show Your Wild Side, and everyone's encouraged to dress as their favorite animal.
And from what I remember, this is pretty much non-competitive.
Yep, exactly. Yeah, we tell girls that they can hop, skip, jump, or run as long as they're moving forward. Everything's fine.
Mm-hmm. And similarly, same day, Saturday, we're going to be having our 5K for the Boys Run E2 Klatsian program. It's going to take place at the Diamond Park Fieldhouse. And our theme, well, we have a loose theme. It's more along the lines of being a superhero. The boys will have capes and they'll have masks. And we just encourage them to keep moving forward as well. Mm-hmm. It's not competitive.
Could you describe in a nutshell the positive aspects of the program?
Definitely. So throughout the program, I think when you say Girls on the Run, it sounds like they're just going to be running. But there's a lot more to it than that. We bring in a lot of the core values of Girls on the Run, like recognizing our power and our responsibility, like expressing joy and optimism, leading with an open heart and standing up for others and for ourselves as well. So throughout the program, we're infusing a lot of positive values into the lives of these girls. And similarly, we do the same with the Boys Run program.
Through Boys Run, we utilize Southeast Alaska Native values, and we teach about respect for ourselves, others, and for nature. And we also teach about what it means to be a positive contributor to the community. So there's a foundation set for growing up to be a healthy man.
And the runs are happening this weekend.
Mm-hmm. Yes, they are, on Saturday, December 5th.
So we are seeking volunteers to come and help, as well as people to come and cheer the children on as they finish their 5Ks.
And what time is it?
The Girls on the Run 5K starts at 10 a.m.
And the Boys Run 5K starts at 2.
You're doing pretty amazing things here in the capital city. I want to thank you. Let us say thank you for coming down to the station today. Anything you'd like to add I might have forgotten to ask?
Thank you very much. Well, I'd like to add one thing that Aware has going on right now. It's called Sponsor a Family. And for anyone who's received services from Aware within the past year, they can register with us. And then people from the community are encouraged to come and sponsor a family. And they'll purchase gifts and meals for families in need. So if anyone is interested in participating in that, they can contact Aware at 586-6623.
As well as if you're interested in volunteering for the 5K, we could be reached at 586-4902.
We're talking with Rachel Wint and Cecilia Westman about the Girls and Boys on the Run program. Thank you so much for coming down to the station today.
Thank you for having us.
What we most often hear is bad news about our teens. That alters what we know is true. Most Alaska teenagers are doing positive things. They're volunteers, role models, and much more. Spirit of Youth tells these stories.
When Mason Sheldon was an 8th grader at Colony Middle School in the Matsu Valley, she was in charge of a small room there called the Colony Closet. The Colony Closet is a way for the school to reuse unclaimed lost and found items while also discreetly outfitting kids with clothes they might need. Inside the small storage room where the Colony Closet is, neatly arranged items sit folded, stacked, and organized. Others hang from makeshift clothes racks.
Well, there's shelves of girls' shoes and boys' shoes. There's quite a few sneakers, I'm sure, from the gym classes. There are a lot of T-shirts and shorts. There's even a blanket down there. I don't know where that came from.
Mason is the student in charge of managing the Colony Closet.
We have a few lost and founds. There's the one by the office, and then there's a box down in each of the gym locker rooms, and that's where we get all the clothes from. Usually at the end of the corridor, if they haven't been claimed by someone, we just take them in there, and we organize them into girl or boy, and if they need to be washed or if they're just fine.
Mason does a good job of keeping the small room tidy and inviting, so that kids who might need the clothes also feel good about going there.
It's kind of nice, and it just makes me happy to think that someone else is benefiting from this, that I'm not just doing it because I can, but because it's going to make someone else's day better, and just going in there a more positive experience.
Mason says she might see about doing something similar at Colony High School this year. I'm Shanna Sheehy.
Do you know of a teenager making a difference where you live? Take some time right now to nominate them for Spirit of Youth. Get more information at spiritofyouth.org.
Listen to this story again at spiritofyouth.org.
It's 40 minutes past here, and you're tuned to listener-supported KTONKRNN here on a June afternoon. I'm Jeff Brown. I'm the host for today. In the studio with you today, I have Cynthia, Steve, Ambrose, and Aaron here to talk about the Juneau Community Charter School's homemade soap. Sounds pretty good.
Yeah, hi. Thanks, Jeff, for having us. My name's Cynthia, and I'm the facilitating teacher at JCCS. And I've got a couple of people here today to help us talk about our annual 8th grade trip that we take in May, and also our fundraising efforts that we've got going on right now. We're selling some soap that has been handmade by the students in our school. So I'll let Aaron tell us a little bit about our 8th grade trip.
Hi. So it's a JCCS tradition for the 8th graders to go out to Denali for a week in May. We cook all of our meals together. We go to the permafrost tunnels. We have night drives in the park, and we stay at the Tri-Valley School outside of the park in Healy. And so we're fundraising for our money during the year.
We are making soap for a fundraiser, and at the moment we have lemon, peppermint, grapefruit, and all for $5 each. We made them ourselves at school. We sold soap for the public market, and we will sell again during the first Friday starting at 4, wandering through the crowds downtown.
Cool.
Look for us wearing bathrobes and blowing bubbles.
Yeah. Not bathrobe weather out there today.
No.
Oh, but it's supposed to be sunny on Friday. That's what I saw on my phone. This is Steve Morley. I'm one of the teachers at the Junior Community Charter School.
Tell me about the process of making soap, please.
So what we do is we get all of our oils. We use sometimes coconut and olive are the two main oils. And then we use lye, and you heat up your oils. Then you add the lye to water, and then once it dissolves, we mix that with a little blender, and we stir it for a long time. Then we pour it into big, long molds. And then we let it set to saponify for a few weeks, and we cut it up into little pieces and package it up.
And how long do the packages last?
How long does one bar last?
Yeah.
A few weeks, months, somewhere in there.
Depending on how much you take a shower.
Yeah. Yeah.
And what kind of scents do they come in?
They're lemon, grapefruit, and peppermint are the three that we've made so far.
And to pick out those particular smells?
Well, we looked online because we use essential oils, and those were the ones that ship pretty well and would get here safely, so we chose those, and we also all agreed that those are nice flavors. Yeah.
Is it fun making things like soap?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Tell me more about the 8th grade trip, if you could, please.
Hi, I'm Steve again. This is a trip that the school's been doing for, I think, since the middle school was founded. And I went on the trip for the first time last year, and it was wonderful. It was a good bonding time with the kids, and the kids are kind of in charge of things. They're in charge of all the shopping. They're in charge of all the cooking, and we take turns cleaning up, and it's just a wonderful time. We stay in churches, and we stay in schools. We go to Healy and stay there for several days and take night drives into the park, and then go back to Fairbanks after we're done with Denali, and just try to see as many sites as we can and see as many have as many educational opportunities as we can to get to know the interior of Alaska.
What kind of educational opportunities do you have making soap?
Well, making soap, that was actually part of it was kind of an extension of a chemistry unit we were doing last year, talking about chemical reactions and exothermic reactions and that sort of thing. So the kids just decided that's what they wanted to focus on. We have a couple other things we're doing as well, but we'll have to come back and talk about those later.
Just using the word saponification is...
Yeah, that's about as... Yeah, exactly. Well, vocabulary is big, but also just the process of being precise in your measuring and thinking about how much money is going into something also. There's quite a bit of math involved. Just trying to figure out what our break-even point is and how we can... how much we can sell the soap for and still make a profit and have it work out for us. So it's a learning opportunity with the chemistry, but it's also an economic thing, and it's also just a community building thing.
Has it been fun making soap?
Sort of. It's, yeah. I mostly...
I remember to watch sometimes, because sometimes like you end up with a little bit of hot oil or the lye, so you want to stand back.
Yeah,
but I like it. It's fun.
Ambrose has a bit of a phobia, so he of the lie. But we're very careful. We are wear all the gear we need to do. We need to wear it. It's a good opportunity.
And how can people pick up bars of soap?
Well, they can talk to us directly at the school. They can just call us there, or stop by, or talk to one of the kids. Any eighth grader from JCCS or any student at JCCS can get you soap. And also on, you know, the first Friday, just make sure and look for the kids in the bathrobes blowing bubbles downtown with boxes of soap for sale.
And how much are they?
They're $5 a bar.
Yeah, they're $5 a bar.
But, of course, we accept donations.
Cynthia, Steve, Ambrose, and Aaron, anything you'd like to add I might have forgotten to ask?
No, I don't think so.
Yeah, we're very thorough. Anything, Cynthia?
No, just want to say that I'm glad to be back on the air talking with about the school with these kids, because this is a really great program.
How many kids are in the Juneau Community Charter School?
We have about 75 kids right now. We do have room openings for more kids. So we'll be looking into doing a little bit more advertising in the spring when it comes time for people to make their choices about where to go to school, since we're an optional school. We have an amazing middle school program, which works really well for some middle schoolers because it's a smaller group size, and we have lots of excellent opportunities for kids to take different classes with community members who come in to teach different things, including, you know, exploratory classes, but also we have lots of extra help when it comes to math, people who come in to help us teach our math classes. So it's a great place to be.
All right. Sounds like it. And thanks for coming by the station.
Thank you so much.
No, thank you so much for having us. Thank you.
support comes from Northern Audiology and Hearing Services, working with medical professionals to diagnose hearing disorders and prescribe solutions. Northern Audiology and Hearing Services. Information at 789-6780.
Mondays are back at the Diamond Park Aquatic Center. Now open Monday through Friday from 6 a.m. until 8 p.m., Saturdays 9 a.m. until 6 p.m., and Sundays noon until 6 p.m. Fall schedules are now available online at juno.org/park/diamond park. For more information, call Diamond Park Aquatic Center at 586-2782.
It's about 9 minutes before the hour, and you are tuned to KFUO's Juno Afternoon. And the studio with me now is Chef Staff here to talk about the opening of the, not the opening, the first Friday at the Juno Artist Gallery.
Yes, thank you for having me, Jeff. I am here to talk about First Friday of Gallery Walk, and Gallery Walk is oh so exciting. I love it. And the Juno Artist Gallery has about 23 artists, and we're all super excited and getting ready. Everybody's working on their displays and filling it up and getting ready for everybody. And you know what? I saw that there is a big yellow icon for Friday, so it looks like there's going to be sun, and that always makes for a great Gallery Walk evening. So, but I want to tell you what we have.
Please.
Our featured artist for the month is Toby Harbinock, and he is the photographer who makes the Northern Lights photos. He prints on aluminum, and he also makes Northern Lights cutting boards and has Christmas ornaments. So he wanted me to tell you that if you missed out at Public Market on the cutting boards, because they all sold out, the Northern Lights one, he has plenty more for First Friday. But to hurry up and get them, because they will go fast. So he wanted me to give you a shout out about that. And oh, his stuff is beautiful. Personally, I'm always a little too sleepy to wake up at 2-3 in the morning. So I'm always grateful to him to capturing these great photos so I could get my beauty sleep. As I mentioned, we also have about 23 artists, and we have, there's jewelry and fiber art and drawings and ukuleles, homemade ukuleles or handmade ukuleles and bird decoys and metal work and woodwork, and just there's such talented people and painters. And we have a new artist that's joined us, and her drawings are just fabulous. So you know, the gallery, things are always changing, and it's people should come by all the time because they're unique, one-of-a-kind things, and they're changing and they're beautiful, and you should just see what's going on. It's truly a gallery.
And it's put on by the local residents here in Juneau.
Yes. Everybody who's part of the gallery is local. It is a co-op, so we're all invested in it, and we work it, it's not a consignment shop. People don't drop off their stuff. We all work it, and we're very much a part of the gallery. And also, come by for the food. You know, with 23 artists, everybody makes stuff that's good grub at our First Fridays.
What are you making for this Friday?
Oh,
I've written the fruit to sell to the people who are...
The Chef Steph line is continuing. I'm talking about running out of stuff at Public Market. I ran out of a few things there, and I'm hoping I'm covered in icing right now. I'm working on getting more. And the first night of Hanukkah is Sunday, and there will be more dreidel cookies. And I know there's a couple of the other artists have Hanukkah related items. So Hanukkah will be represented at the gallery. Woohoo!
And what are the hours for the opening?
I believe 4:30 to 7. And sometimes it goes a little later, but usually by about 7, it teeters up. So.
Cool.
Yes. So once again, come on down. It's especially with the kids selling soap on the sidewalk. You know, it's going to. I love Gallery Walk weekend. It's just such a fun community time, and especially if it's not going to be raining sideways and icy, it'll be great. So please, everybody, come out, join us, say hello.
And where's the gallery?
Oh, good question. In the Senate building behind the Bear's Lair. So on Franklin Street and in between the Bear's Lair and the stairs going up.
Do you have a website?
The gallery does have a website. It's JunoArtistGallery.com, and one of our members is his task is webmaster. So we wear many hats in addition to creating our art.
And obviously, you wear a chef's hat.
I do wear a chef's hat from time to time.
Jessica, thank you for coming by.
Thank you very much, Jeff.
Just a few minutes before the hour on June afternoon. Tomorrow on the show, Jimmy Wace will host. We'll talk about all things Eagle Crest. Evelyn Bass will be here to profile her new business, Deeper Light Psychotherapy. We'll get a preview of this month's Wildlife Wednesday program on photographing Alaska's wildlife featuring Michael Phelps. We'll highlight this Friday's gallery walk, High Tide, featuring paintings by Emily Rodke and musician Mitch Sumler. And we'll learn about this Sunday recital concert featuring Kyle Farley Robinson and the Mendenhall String Quartet. Well, the forecast for tonight, cloudy skies with scattered rain showers. Low temperatures around 35 degrees. Forecast for Wednesday, cloudy skies with patchy fog in the morning. Scattered rain showers. High temperatures around 41 degrees. Forecast for Thursday, mostly cloudy skies with scattered rain showers. Forecast for Friday night, mostly cloudy skies with a chance of rain and snow. Thanks for tuning in to June Afternoon today. Have a pleasant evening.